Hey, Wonderfuls, welcome to episode 493 of the JV Club with my awesome guest, Ashley Ray. She is responsible for many, many cool things on the internet, including the Stitcher Podcast TV, I say. So give this episode a listen. I know you're going to like it. For those of you who celebrate Thanksgiving in whatever form you choose to make that happen, I wish you a good one. And we are also, let's see, by the time you listen to this, we will have announced some great new shows at SF Sketchfest that have been added to our roster, including a Mighty Wind live event with the cast and a ton of other great stuff and even more to come. So check us out at sfsketchfest.com. You can get tickets now, and I hope to see some of you there.
I am currently in Bogota, Colombia.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know where I thought. Why am I so shocked? There's no what the answer that if you had said Santa Fe, I would have been like, that makes sense.
I feel like I tour America all the time. People are like, oh, Chicago, you're in Chicago, New York, San Francisco. Okay, whatever. Yeah. And then I came down here, and people were like, oh, wait, you're like really on vacation? Like,
yeah.
Oh, you're not just on tour. Yeah. So
yeah. Wait, are you on vacation? Are you doing this on vacation?
Kind of. It's like my friend is living here for a while, so I came to visit her, and then it was like we did a week in Medellin, which is kind of like, I don't know, the Chicago of Colombia, I guess.
Yeah.
It's like very indie, artsy, and hip.
Nice.
And then Bogota is kind of more like a big city, New York vibe, so I'm kind of just exploring, like doing vacation stuff on the weekends, and then like working through the week.
Got it. I mean, we're living in that world now, for sure.
Right? I was like, remote work world. Like, yeah.
When you say you're working through the week, what are you working on? This is an immediate plug opportunity. Do you see what I've done here?
Yeah.
Usually I wait till the MASH game. I'm not even going to do it this time.
Let's dive right in.
Let's get in front of it.
I'm recording my first comedy album early next year. So I've been doing just a ton of shows to like get that hour down. If you're in LA, November 17th at the Elysian, you can come see me do my hour.
Oh, nice.
Niles Abstin will be opening. So just kind of figuring out, like, listening to myself a ton and seeing if I really think I like jokes that I've been, you know, telling for like 3 years. And then just a lot of writing, you know, I've got some pieces that are lined up for Vox and some other places.
Nice.
And my editors are like, could you please finish those edits?
Uh-huh. I don't know how many different ways I can talk about not doing stand-up, but I don't do stand-up. And one of the many things that I find so impressive is like just living with jokes for a long time, and you know, in some cases not so long, but the idea of what it took me such a long time as a writer to not get tired of writing through multiple edits. So the idea of like performing a joke that I also may or may not start to get sick of, but then you have to sort of go, well, this might just be me or my mood, people are still laughing at it. Like, I got to hold on to this thing. I got to plow through this. Do you have those moments where you're like, while I now hate this joke, the people still love it. So
the people
gotta
still
keep
love
doing
it. Yeah. I mean, that's like, I have jokes I've been telling for like, you know, 5-6 years, and people still love them. They're still great. And, you know, you're always reaching new audiences, but like you just kind of go on autopilot where you're like, dun, 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 dun. Like you just said it so many times.
Sure.
There's like a moment in the show, the TV show Hacks, where Deborah Vance is like, they show like her doing the same set on top of each other at night night.
Yes.
And you're just like, that is 100% what it's like. It's just like at a certain point you're on autopilot. And I guess that's why I'm excited to make this album, because it'll be a way for me to get those tracks down for the whole world and never tell them again.
Uh-huh. Retire them. We'll play taps at the end of the special. It's going to be great. Yeah, I just have nothing but respect for that. And I think people do think of that kind of repetition. I think they perceive it differently than, you know, going to a show and seeing, you know, your favorite singer perform a song that you know because you've looked online that the track list is the same. They've got their track list that they play, you know, on their entire tour. And I just don't think people necessarily, because joke telling has this sort of element of spontaneity to it, like where it does feel like, you know, if you're doing your job, you're making it. It sounds like you're coming up with it a bit on the spot, you know, at least more so than like you know, singing a song for the umpteenth time. And then you have like singers who like really make sure to sing differently every time they sing the song, which I feel like that could go wrong a lot.
Oh yeah, I actually hate that. I hate when I like go see a band I love and they finally play like the hit I want to hear and they do it a little different and you're just like, come on, like I don't need that.
Yeah. I feel like when I was a kid, like Counting Crows was like the sort of punchline example of that. Apparently that singer, I never saw them or anything, but apparently that singer would just be like, you know, around here. Yeah. I'm going to talk now. Now I'm just going to say the next few lyrics. I'm just going to say them. I'm just going to say them out loud. I'm talking.
Yeah.
Speak poetry. Just, you know, what?
You'd always be like, oh, I hate that we got so popular. I still want to be like a different alt band. And it's like, come on.
Yeah. Come on.
You're on the
come
Shrek on, soundtrack. Come like, chill.
I love that you could throw that in anybody's face was on the Shrek soundtrack.
Yeah, very Smash useful. Mouth. Yeah,
Smash Mouth is like, thank God we're on the Shrek soundtrack. Yeah. Others might be a little bit less enthusiastic.
True.
Do you have a music background at all? Have you played instruments or any of that stuff?
I guess. I played guitar. I started when I was like 12. And played mostly through middle school and high school. I was in jazz band, played guitar. I did orchestra in middle school, and I was percussion, which mostly I just did percussion because my mom could only afford to buy me drumsticks. When it was the day to like bring your instrument in, I was like, Mom, I need like an instrument. Can I have a saxophone? And she was like, no, but I can afford drumsticks and a practice pad. So nice. I did that, but I hated orchestra. And like, I like jazz band because, you know, you just kind of blend in. I was just rhythm guitar. I wasn't lead. I wasn't doing anything like fun or exciting. And I don't know. It's weird because like if I am just on stage, me and a microphone telling jokes, reading poems, I don't get stage fright. Like I'm just put me on a stage with a microphone and I'm good.
Yeah.
But if I have an instrument, I get so nervous.
I get that.
And like we had to do these tests in our orchestra class where like everybody went up one by one and you had to like play a certain song to pass. And I had to go up and play the xylophone, you know, because percussion. And I was just shaking the whole time and like couldn't do it. And I was just like, the instruments aren't for me.
Okay. First of all, who cares? You're great. And
Thank you.
Go fuck themselves. No, but
exactly.
Second of all, I'm so embarrassed that when you said that, I was like, oh, a xylophone is percussion. It is percussion.
It is,
I forgot that things that play very specific notes are also
percussion. Still percussion. We got the xylophone, timpani, bass drum, snare drum.
Triangle?
Yeah. Triangle. We had one of those.
Gong?
A gong? We did have a gong. A gong.
Yes. Five for five. Okay, xylophone. Yes, 100%. If you had asked me to put a xylophone into a category, would I have said percussion? Would I have arrived at that on my own had you not brought it up? I'm very scared that I would have been like, I mean, I know it's not a woodwind. It's also not a string. Like, I think I would have had to, like, by process of elimination, maybe have gotten to percussion.
I would have been like, I don't know, is piano, like, a category?
Yeah, exactly. They look like keys, therefore, family. It's in the piano family.
You hit it with the mallet thing, so.
You're so right. This has rocked my world.
I'm gonna take
a little time with this information.
You know, if only I'd been good at it, you know.
Yeah, well, listen, you're gonna there could come a time when you reintroduce percussion into your performing life vis-a-vis, and I'm so excited I got an opportunity to say that term, your jokes. That's it. You can become, I mean, do we have that? We have the cliche of like the person who does the little, you know, rim shot, who's off to the side when the comedian is saying something. Do we have the person who's incorporated drums or percussion right into their stand-up set? The person who they themselves are providing, perhaps not a rim shot, but perhaps a little xylophone like, doo-loo-loo-loo. And that's why I did it. Doo-loo-loo-loo-loo. People might be really into that.
I think they'd like it. I think that, yeah.
Okay. All right. Don't listen to any of my ideas. Don't take any of it. It's really bad. When did you start doing stand-up?
I started doing stand-up when I moved to Chicago. This is like 2015, basically. I moved to Chicago in 2013, but I always knew I loved comedy. Like in high school, we would have talent shows, and like I would just memorize Mitch Hedberg jokes and like dress up as him and like do a full Mitch Hedberg set. Or like I said, I played guitar, so I like learned a bunch of Flight of the Conchord songs and would just like play them at school all the time. So like I knew I loved comedy, but I was always like, well, that's not a way to make money. So in college, I was like, that's, you know, childish. I have to get my degrees. But then when I moved to Chicago, there was just such a supportive open mic comedy scene. If you know Sarah Sherman, who's now on SNL, and Becca O'Neill, who's just an amazing New York comic, they started in Chicago. And at the time, they were the hosts of the Kohl's Open Mic, which is like the biggest, like, I want to say the biggest open mic in Chicago, but kind of like, you know, it's been running for years. Cameron Esposito came from there, Hannibal Buress.
Sure.
And it just like, it used to be like a very masculine open night mic, like it goes until 2 a.m. and like if you're a woman it's hard to get up. But you know, Sarah and Rebecca, they were just so good at centering women and people of color, and it just created this environment where I was like, oh, I can do this, I'm supported, this isn't just like a white guy thing.
Sure. Oh my god, which makes all the difference. And I do feel like Chicago, my experience of podcasting people from Chicago in the years that I've talked about, you know, high school years and whatnot on this podcast, I do feel like one of the things that comes up over and over again is the idea that Chicago may not have the most opportunities in entertainment, but that there is this sort of, and I hate to say like, it goes back to like the sort of Midwestern, like put your shoulder to the wheel and like grind it out. But that there is this like, hey, dude, this is a job. Like, this is a job. This is doesn't have to be a flight of fancy. Like, there's tons of improv schools here. People are going up every night.
Yeah.
Like, people are doing comedy. There's something about it that I think for a lot of people, like, legitimizes that as, like, this is a job like any other job. And it may not pay that much, but it is a job.
Oh, definitely not.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it was, like, the first time I, you know, I started with open mics. And then I started, like, booking just, like, smaller showcases. And it got to a point where I was like, oh, my gosh, I'm making enough money from comedy to, like, pay for my weed every week.
Uh-huh.
You know, making, like, oh, wow, like, $40-$50.
These are the gauges we use. Okay, I could pay for coffees. Wait a minute. I can pay for my
weed.
Can
you pay for my weed? Like, 100%. I'm really making it. And then in 2016, I started working at The Onion, and that's when I was like, okay, comedy is, you know, it's going to be something I really focus on and that I love. Yeah.
Oh, good for you. Where did you move from when you moved into Chicago?
So I grew up in Northern Illinois, but I went to college in Western Massachusetts, a very tiny liberal arts school called Williams that very few people have heard of. And after that, like, it's literally in a mountain range. They call it the purple bubble because, like, the closest grocery store is 40 minutes away.
Okay.
And, yeah. And I was like, I need to be in a city again. Like, I can't do this.
Oh, my God.
And since I was from Illinois, a lot of my friends were in Chicago, so I went right back there and, you know, got to kind of just get right back into my old friend groups and reconnect with people who, like, were really just kind of creatively aligned with me and really inspiring. And yeah, it was great.
How much of the experience being in that purple bubble did you take with you? Because, you know, you say kind of dropping back into this life before, did it end up sort of feeling like you were like, and remember when I was in outer space for a few years, guys? I served my mission. I came back and then I resumed business as usual.
Sorry. I had to, like,
try and sneeze. Sneeze it up.
It truly was just like such a different experience and so weird. It's like this period of my life when I'm just like, what? And it was unlike kind of anything else. Like, I was so used to big cities. And
what took you, like, there, by the way, if I don't
It is a really good school. Like, at the time when I was graduating, it was like the number one liberal arts school, and I got a full ride.
Nice.
And then they also were like one of the first schools in the country to do no loans.
Uh-huh.
So if you went there, they wouldn't put loans in your package. And so I was like, oh, well, full ride. And then if I, you know, do, you know, for the stuff that I do have to cover, I don't have to get a loan out.
Yes.
So I was like, basically that.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, I was like, great. That's a good deal. It's a good school. And, you know, at the time, so my high school was very small. There were like 22 kids in my class.
Whoa, and that is small. Okay.
Yeah, very tiny. So going from that to Williams, where, you know, it's like 400 kids in a class, I was like, oh, this is going to be huge. Uh-huh. This is gigantic. And then your first year there, you realize like, oh, there's 2,000 kids total here. I see the same people every day. I'm going crazy. It's cold here all the time. Like, there's nothing to do. And I couldn't do it all 4 years. My junior year, I went abroad because I was just like, I can't anymore. And
where'd you go?
I went to Germany. I lived in Hamburg and Sweden for a bit.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And yeah, I lived in a city. I was just like, oh my gosh, people, it feels so good.
Yeah, no kidding.
But I think like I took a lot from that. Like when I left, I kind of found this new ability to, I don't know, just try to entertain myself wherever I am and like find people that like you click with. Like, yeah. I think survived that school because I found such a strong group of friends where we were in it together.
Nice. Okay, yeah. So you did end up, you did collect some people that you kept with you.
Oh, yeah.
Along the way. It wasn't a blip that you're like, yeah, I mean, there's no like evidence that I even ever went there.
That I even ever went there. I know. Yeah. I still have some really good friends because it's truly just like we survived that January winter when it was like -40 degrees in Western Massachusetts together, yeah. You know, and like it's kind of, you'd feel like you escape a bit when you finally graduate. Like,
yeah, I mean, does that, I guess the positive side of that would be like, listen, you are going to get real good at school because ain't nothing else going on.
I will admit that was another reason I went there. I was a big nerd. Might be hard for people to imagine because I'm so like cool now. Uh-huh. But like, I truly was one of those kids my senior year where I was just like, I'm going to college to learn. Uh-huh. Like, why would I go to party? Like, I'm going to learn, get my degrees.
Yeah.
So I did want to go to like a school.
I love you even knew multiple degrees. You were like, I'm not even, there's an S at the end of that, y'all.
I always knew I was going to double in English and history.
Got it.
And then somehow when I got there also ended up majoring in German.
You're saying you had triple major?
Yeah.
Oh, my Lord in heaven. Okay.
Yeah. Nobody liked me. I did not.
What about Germany? You're like, see ya. It'll matter here.
So, yeah, in Germany, I did the Smith College program. And honestly, the Smith College girls, they were nerdier than me. They were bigger nerds. So when I did that, I was like the cool kid. They were like, wow, a girl from Williams. Like, she's, wow. And I was just like, yeah, you know, I'm dangerous. Yeah, I studied German and history. But like, then I would go back to Williams and people... This was like kind of before really, I guess, Twitter and stuff had blown up. And we had this thing on campus called WSO, William Students Online. And you could just like post about things on campus, post about whatever. And someone posted asking how many triple majors were on campus. And people were like, why do you want to know how many nerds are here? Why do you want to know the people making the worst decisions? Uh-huh. And of course, there's like four of us who are like, we figured out our triple majors and we're happy. Like, don't be mad at us because like we know what we wanted to do.
Okay, we're going to take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun.
I'm sure you've noticed how giant corporations are controlling more and more about what we consume, whether it's our food, our news, or even the shows we enjoy.
The Greatest Generation is a show that stands up to big Star Trek and says no. We can laugh about costumes that fit too tightly in the groin area.
We can make a Star Trek podcast that's basically only about that.
The Greatest Generation, the show for free and independent thinkers about Star Trek.
And the groins of different costumes.
Reviewing every episode in order.
So subscribe to The Greatest Generation on MaximumFun.org. You'll be doing your part in telling the Star Trek industrial complex that they can't control your mind.
Please tell me there's no minors if you have three majors. If you have three
majors.
No,
there's no minors. There's no minors.
You've got three majors.
Yeah, my school didn't have minors. They just had like concentrations. So,
okay, yep.
Like
yep,
you pick your major and then like have a concentration. So I majored in like English with a concentration in creative writing and history with a concentration in German history and German language. So
okay, so history like, with a concentration. Okay, yeah. So
yeah, and so that made sense. And then I don't know. Like I said, I was a nerd in high school. I took languages from, you know, 4th through 12th grade. To me, like, if you're in school, you should be studying a language. Like, that's just how my brain worked. So when
that's you, that's your head. That's not like also your upbringing of people, of your family members being like,
My mom was always like, I want you to learn Spanish because duh. And I was just like, cool, mom, I'm going to take Latin.
I'm going to take the original Spanish, thanks.
True. And like, also, like I said, my nerd school, it was mandatory for all sixth graders to take Latin. So I started there, and then it was just kind of like, well, if you want to be like one of the good students, you continue taking Latin. Like, you know, it was kind of like, to me, I don't know, there was like a high, to me, I felt like, oh, the cool kids are the ones who like take Latin and another language. So I think like seventh grade, I eventually started taking Spanish and Latin, and I was just like, yeah, you should always, if you're in school, you should just always take a language. So when I went to college, I was like, oh, I'll probably just keep taking classics and Latin. And quickly I was like, oh, that is useless. I was like,
it took you to that point, though. It did take you that long.
It truly did take me 7 years to be like, you know what? I don't need to do this. Like, what am I studying? I know enough Latin for it to be like useful for an SAT, and I did the SAT. Uh-huh. So what are we still doing here? And I wanted to take Swedish, but my school didn't have Swedish. Yeah. And German is kind of like the next closest language they had. So I was like, oh, I'll do German, get the basics, and then eventually I'll be able to take Swedish. Never took Swedish. Uh-huh. And there you go.
What drew you to Swedish and Sweden?
So I grew up in this town, Rockford, Illinois, which at one point had like the highest Swedish population like outside of Stockholm, like, you know, way back in like, I don't know, the 1700s or something, like when they were immigrant. But it's like this little northern Illinois town that is like heavily Swedish. It was also founded by Louis Lemon, a black man. And a French person. So it was very like diverse.
Yeah.
I loved like growing up there. I was very used to just like eating Swedish pancakes with lingonberries. And, you know, I had a lot of like Swedish friends who introduced me to like their heritage and stuff. And I, at some point in high school, got really into Ingmar Bergman movies, the Swedish director.
Yeah.
And like, I just fell in love with his movies. To me, they were everything. I was like, The Seventh Seal is my soul. Like, wow, Scenes from a Marriage. He just gets me. Oh my God, Summers with Monica.
Scenes from a Marriage, you said, as a
17-year-old.
We've all done it. I definitely was reading. I was reading Margaret Atwood novels about like the dissolution of marriage when I was 15, being like, she really gets me.
Like, yeah, like as I said, I was just like a pretentious nerd in high school. Yeah. And I don't know, I was like, oh, I'll learn Swedish and be able to like watch Ingmar Bergman movies without subtitles and it'll be beautiful.
Yeah.
And that's truly like it. I was just like, oh, it's cool because like Swedish people are where I live and... Yeah.
Well, does that translate to like, have you, I'm not like meaning to blow anyone's mind right now, particularly not yours, but because you have this active mind and because you had, just even based on you talking about like wanting to see through Latin, right? Like if I'm going to know, maybe not so much with the percussion, the xylophone, but like,
if you are
a person who's like, I have an affinity towards this, are you going to keep pursuing what, like, well, what else is out there about this?
Yeah.
Like, if it's in front of you and there's more, are you going to be like, well, the story doesn't end here. Let me look. So if you had grown up in a place where it was like Norwegians instead of Sweden, like, would you have found like the beauty in Norwegian art or in Norwegian,
I think so. You know, it's like, it just happened to be one of the weird things around me, like in my little weird town.
I mean, it's very interesting. Just, like, no shade. Like, I totally get it.
And, you know, but also like, I mean, Latin, I will also say that as... On top of like being like just super nerdy and pretentious, obviously I was a very competitive student. And like, to me, it was very like, okay, if you want to like compete with the top of the class, you have to take all the classes. Like, it was always, I'm just like, yeah, this is, you know, my therapist and I are talking about why I just constantly feel the need to compete. But it was very like, you know, I liked competing. We had a national Latin exam where you would take this exam. We had a curtamen team where you would compete in Latin language and trivia against other schools. And I just love that aspect of it, of just being like, I compete in this thing nobody knows. I have 3 gold medals in the national Latin exam.
You're a gold medal. medal winner. You're a gold medal winner.
Yes, yes. And truly one of the biggest disappointments of my life is that my senior year, I did not place for gold. It would have been my fourth. And if you get all four, you get a gold Latin dictionary, which I truly did want so badly.
And I just imagined it being all gold, like every page is gold.
Yeah, it was like gold, but like I wanted it so bad. And my senior year, I went in sick that day for the National Latin Exam. And the question I got wrong, a lot of Latin teachers actually like filed a complaint because they felt it was a multiple choice answer. They felt it was unclear. I still to this day, like when I go back to my like school and I talk to my Latin teacher, she's like, I do believe you deserve that point. You know, it was a questionable wording of like, it was about Romulus and Remus, the founders of Rome. Clearly, this haunts me. I remember every detail.
Oh, good. You're like, and I am still, in a way, competing for that fourth gold medal.
Yeah, and you know, I think
anytime if someone wants to go ahead and give it to me, I don't consider it like an honorary medal. I consider
legit
medal. I should not have been graded down on that.
Yeah, and you know, if the National Latin Exam would like to fix that some 15 years later, I would accept it. I would accept it.
I'm going to work on that. I'm going to quit everything I'm doing and see if I can't make that happen.
Yeah. Yeah. The great Romulus and Remus question of 2009, National Latin Exam, big controversy. You'll see.
I remember the New York Post reported on it. A lot of reportage.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, when you knew that you wanted to, you know, for example, when you're in the small school, was it a private school? Was that why it was so small?
Yeah, it was a tiny, weird private school.
Was it like Catholic school or?
Oh, no.
You're like, no.
Yeah. Like my city, Rockford, it's to clear my city, Rockford, Illinois is Forbes magazine ranked it the like third most depressing city in America. Yahoo ranked it like the most miserable place to live in America. It's basically like the Flint, Michigan of Illinois is how it's viewed.
Boy, you have I love that I'm learning this now because you have painted such an extraordinary picture of what you were passionate about that I'm like, no.
Yeah, people are like, oh, you must be from some
Rockford.
Like, yeah,
my
you're
Rockford,
like, you must be from some, yeah, you're like from some nice Chicago suburb, right? And then it's like, no, it's Rockford. It has like more crime per capita than Chicago. Basically, it was a big industrial town. It used to be known as Screw City because it made the most screws in the world. When all the industry left in the 80s under Reagan, it basically just became kind of a ghost town and just full of poverty, crime.
Reagan made the economy great and kept all
I thought he just like fixed everything, but I do see the criticism, but for me growing up there, like I can talk about Rockford being bad. If anyone else tries it, I will fight them. I'm like, no, you can't say anything about my hometown. But
sure,
you know, it definitely had problems. It's racist. It's like very segregated. And part of that is that the school district, the public school district, is horrible. Like, it's so segregated that unless you live on the far, far east side and you're going to Guilford, the only like kind of good public school, you're going to end up at Auburn, where there were like more fights than, you know, like class periods, because they'd usually have to like shut down for the day. Like most of the textbooks were from the 60s and 70s, and that's where my friends went, that's where my brothers and sisters went, and it's a horrible school. Like they have a higher teen pregnancy rate than graduation rate. And my mom, she was she had her own daycare, she did early childhood development, and she just was like, I can't send you to these schools. Like, I don't know why she, with me, I'm the youngest, I guess. But with
how many brothers and sisters do you have? How many people did that cycle through? A sister or brother for every year of Latin you took?
I have two older brothers and an older sister, but to be fair, they're like all like 18, 20 years older than me.
Got it.
So, you know, in their day, the schools probably weren't as bad, okay?
When they were
there in like the 70s. So. Yeah.
Okay, so you're a baby.
Yeah, I'm the baby.
And by that
baby.
Time, your mom also had the sort of like experience
foresight,
of her
yeah.
life to, yeah.
Yeah, you know,
to
and
that.
To see like those were horrible schools and I don't want Ashley to go through that. And all of the public or the private schools in Rockford, though, most of them are religious. You know, they're either Catholic or, you know, Rockford Christian. And then there is one private school that is independent of religion. It's called Keith Country Day School. And that's where I went. And my mom truly chose it because she was like, it's independent of religion. She tried to send me to a religious school for elementary, for like first through third grade. I went to this school called Faith Academy. And I just got in trouble every day. Like, I would bring Pokemon cards to school and get in trouble because they said Pokemon were from the devil. I got in trouble for, like, reading a Harry Potter book.
One of those schools.
And it just, like, reached a point where my mom was just like, you're all ridiculous. She can read Harry Potter. I'm taking her out of this school. And so she found one that she was like, okay, this place... It's independent of religion, but it's also the like most expensive school in Rockford. I mean, the tuition is basically like a college tuition, and they do have scholarships. I managed to get one. So I got like a full ride. I didn't have to pay for anything except for like textbooks and.
And when did you start that school? Sorry.
Fourth grade.
Okay.
Yeah. So
somehow
fourth grade,
you had managed to kind of keep it together enough, like even in the circumstances of like,
yeah,
this ain't
you know,
great
of like, yeah, like I just was like, I don't know why I was very like, this religious school is so silly anyway. I was like happy to go somewhere else. And it's like a very tiny, tiny school. When I went in fourth grade, there were 9 people in our class and only 3 girls, just me and 2 other girls. No, we didn't get along. So,
oh, good.
Yeah, 3 girls, and like we mostly all hated each other.
Bump into each other at all.
It's actually funny because we all still see each other to this day.
Oh yeah, how do you feel now?
I mean, so there was another girl who was new the same year I was, and we did click because we were both new. But then the other girl, she'd been the only girl in the class since like kindergarten, so she felt all threatened. She was like, "I'm the girl. Who are these girls?"
Oh my goodness.
Before I tell this story, I'm going to say this. She was racist. Like,
all right.
There were only 3 girls in our class, and she would have sleepovers and be like, I'm going to have an all-girl sleepover and not invite me because she said black people stole. So she didn't want me in her house. So it would just be sleepovers with her and the one other girl. And I was clearly like, I did not get an invite. Oh. And it became such an issue that the school had to have like a sit down with the parents to be like, okay, Kat, not gonna say it. To be like, okay, so she doesn't want Ashley at her and she was this teachers were literally like, so she doesn't want Ashley at her house because she thinks black people steal, and we are fine with that, but we came up with an alternate solution. Ashley, you can go to the boy sleepovers if your mom is okay with that. You know, we still want you to socialize, so would you be happy going to the sleepovers with the boys? Yeah, that was their solution, was that they were like, oh, well, Ashley gets along with the guys too, so can't she just like go to their sleepovers?
I guess that's the same thing.
Yeah, and I mean, my mom, to her credit, was just like, well, yeah, Ashley's friends with her. Like, I don't know, for me, I was like, yeah, I don't care. Like, I like the guys, I'll hang. And so that's what, you know, she would just drive me to like the boys in their LAN parties, and we would like watch Quentin Tarantino movies.
And you're like, now who's the only girl?
Yeah, now it's the only, right? And it was just a weird school where that's how they like handled things. It was very like racist, like super rich kids.
Yeah, I mean, I'm like, definitely stunned by like, we know this isn't right.
Yeah.
But we're not going to address it in any kind of like meaningful way.
Meaningful way. That was the entire school.
Very like, strange.
The school went from kindergarten to 12th grade, and 6th through 12th graders are all in the same building.
Yeah.
And when you get to 6th grade, it's mandatory to have a laptop. So every student gets a laptop when you're in 6th grade. And for me, this was like, what, 2002? So imagine giving a 12-year-old a laptop in 2002.
Yeah, that's, I'm like, stupid. Did I have a laptop?
They, this is like before they knew how to do firewalls or anything. Uh-huh. Like, we were just like on these, we're in school, like in AIM chat rooms.
No.
Like, dudes are like, weird dudes are asking us for nudes and stuff. We're just,
oh God.
It was horrible. And
so just a lot of like, we're not thinking this through to like its logical conclusion.
To,
we're
just sort of
like dealing with what's here in the moment and like,
Like my best friends in 6th and 7th grade were like 11th and 12th graders because we were all in the same building and, you know, we'd talk online. And it was like, there would be 8th graders who dated 12th graders and the school was just like, okay. And we'd be like...
What was your dating experience like? Were you dating any of those 12th graders?
No. Yeah. I, like I said, the school was very racist. So as a black girl and one of only two, I was the only black kid in my class. And then there was only like one other black girl in the whole school who her name was Chevy. And they would get our names mixed up all the time. And then it just became like a joke among all the teachers and students to call me Chevy and her Ashley. And we would just be like, "That, how is this funny?
We're all, like this, hey, ladies, we're all in on this joke.
Yeah,
isn't
like,
this
oh, we
fun?
Love it. And
it's
we
would a just thing be, we all share.
We all love it. Don't you love it? And we would just be God. Like, no. And, like, we never loved this.
Yeah.
And
wow.
You know, even, I don't know, like, it just was very clear to me, like, oh, the standard of beauty at this school is skinny white girls, and this is not for me. So I never dated anyone from my, like, middle school or high school. I had, like, one crush on a boy, and I think I told him I did. I just I think it was, like, my freshman year, we went to, like, this DIY show. Rockford has, like, a lot of little DIY venues and bands play. And we went to one where, like, I knew everyone, I hung out all the time, and we were, like, hanging in the back part where, like, that's where the cool kids could hang out, where, like, you know, there was, like, this back stairwell where you could go and, like, smoke, and people would do graffiti, and we were, like, sitting back there, and I was like, I mean, I like you, and I don't know, maybe we could date or something, and instead he was just like, you want me to take your virginity right now?
Okay.
And I was like, right here on these steps behind Minglewood. Oh. And he was like, last chance to lose your virginity. And then I was just like, crush over. Like, done.
Yeah, good for you. I mean,
yeah. So I only really dated, like, people from my neighborhood. You know, I grew up on, like, the segregated black side of town. And I dated people who mostly went to Auburn, the public school by me. Like, my whole dating life was just, like, outside of the high school.
Sure. Yeah. Which, again, like, I that's absolutely true for me also. Like, there was definitely no, like, you are here and only here, so whatever your friendship or dating pool is going to be there. Like, for sure.
There. Yeah.
Not necessarily. But the reasons for me did not include racism. So that fucking sucks.
Yeah, and it was just,
what a
you
mess.
Know,
what a mess.
I don't like regret it. I think most of my friends who did date within our high school regret that. So, uh-huh. You know, and
yeah, that's also hard. Like, being with, being like, listen, kid that I was like 8 with, now I'm ready to see you in a whole new light.
Yeah.
Now a person that I'm going to have sex with. That also feels like super weird. Like, you're my sibling. You're basically my school sibling.
And I forgot, the reason I mentioned that girl was racist is because, like, after all of that, me and the other new girl, we bound together.
Yeah.
And maybe what was, like, my first and biggest moment as a bully, we, like, started writing her fake love letters from this guy that, like, like, on these, like, sleepovers, she'd be like, I have such a crush on this boy. And so when the other girl told me, I was like, oh, I have my plan for revenge. And I started just, like, writing all these, like, fake anonymous letters where I'd be like, I heard you like me and I like you too. And if you, like, want to, like, date or something, wear a red shirt to school tomorrow. And then she'd wear, like, a red shirt.
Manipulative, like, pull, like, puppet master shit.
It was truly evil.
Wait, when you say your first and biggest, how many were there after this that were significantly smaller, but still you categorize as yourself as a bully?
I'm like, first,
and was it,
like,
all about that one girl?
No, I'm like, no, but to me, it's like, was I a bully or was I just responding to the racism I was facing? Like, is it bullying if it's also, like, this white kid who, like, left chicken bones outside my locker and was like, don't your people use those?
I mean, no, it's not
bullying. No, that's just retaliating.
It's retaliating.
So when I wrote her fake love letters and she cried when she finally found out Stevie didn't even know who she was, that was just because, hey, don't be racist then.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd say, like, I think it was seventh grade, I was on, like, our math and science team. And I was the only girl. They, like, drove us to Springfield, Illinois for some, like, competition. And on the way there, like, one of the boys started making fun of me and was like, Ashley's not even smart. She's a girl. And, like, what do black people even know about science? And blah, blah, blah.
So you got it from all, you were getting sexism.
Yeah, like,
and
everywhere.
Racism,
And they were playing with this Rubik's Cube and they were, like, passing it between all the boys. And they were like, Ashley, you won't even be able to solve it. Like, why would we waste time giving it to you? And they wouldn't give me the Rubik's Cube. And finally, like, I grabbed it as they were snatching it. And I, like, was trying to do it. And they just were, like, yelling at me and, like, calling me names. He was like, you're a stupid bitch, Ashley. And I just looked at that kid who was, like, sitting in the front of the car with the Rubik's Cube. And I was like, fine, I don't want it anymore. And I threw it very hard.
Uh-huh.
And I thought he'd catch it. And he kind of did, but he caught it with his eye. He caught it with his face.
Yeah.
And it like messed his eye up. Yeah. Like he had like this huge bruise on his head. Like we are going to this competition. He has like an ice pack. And I was just like, I don't feel bad for you. Yeah. I was like, you literally call me all these names. You should have put your hands up and caught it. Yeah. And so, you know, some may have been bullying. But to me, it was like, you kind of deserved it, you know?
I mean, I think holding kids accountable for like reacting to torture of one type by like finally just like exploding is hard to, and of course I'm not saying like go, you know, there's
go bully, but yeah.
But like, you know, I mean, yeah, that's super, it's just, super understandable.
Yeah, it's hard to, like, when I tell those stories, people are like, oh, that's so mean. But then when I give the background, like, what my school was like, people are like, oh, that's fair. Like,
I mean, you were getting bullied by the nerds.
Yeah,
like, you were getting bullied by everyone.
Yeah, including and, like, even the math teachers. And like, yeah, teachers would be like, oh, well, you know, like, in high school, they thought I was, like, a troublemaker and a, like, a druggie because I was a black girl. Like, truly, they'd just be like, you have to take care of your reputation, Ashley.
Oh,
and I would just be
God.
Like, why don't you go talk to, like, the white kids who are doing coke in the bathroom? Like, why are you yelling at me?
Yeah.
And there wasn't a lot of diversity. Like, we had two Jewish kids in our class, and they used to play this game called Throw the Jew in the Can. And they would take the Jewish kid and put him in a trash can and then throw pennies at him. And teachers would join in. Like, teachers would join. Teachers would be like, ha, that's so funny. Like, the French teacher would be like, I have some quarters. Like, I'm not kidding. And, like, these kids would just be like, oh, they do it because we're friends.
It's like a horror movie.
Like,
have you contacted Jordan Peele? Have you contacted Jordan to be like, hey, guess what? Remember the faculty?
Yeah.
I got
an idea. And people think I'm making it up. And then I, like, talked to that kid. And he was like, yeah, it totally happened. But it was because we were friends. And I was just like, Billy, no. I'm sorry.
No, yeah.
I was like, no, dude. It was because they were bad people. That wasn't friendship. And, like, teachers would encourage it. So it, like, wasn't a place where when these things would happen to me, I knew I could, like, go to a teacher or the principal and be like, hey, this is happening. Because they would just be like, well, you know, that's how they feel. And, you know, maybe it was a joke and maybe you should find a new way to build on this as a friendship. And it's like, no, these are racist kids.
Which is like gaslighting, basically.
Yeah.
You know, when you sort of like deform what's happening and turn it into something that's like your problem. Like, well, maybe you're just too angry.
It's your anger and maybe blah. So, you know, my school, like from a very early age, I was like, this is a toxic place. Like, all of my friends were from other social activities.
Yeah.
Like, I did eventually get a best friend at my high school, like, when I was in high school. And it was only because we, like, met in Girl Scouts when I was in eighth grade.
There you go.
And I was like, I got my friend. Like, I got, like...
Yeah. Oh,
and, like, God. She also was, like, on scholarship. So we were, like, the two, like, we're on scholarship. We're poor.
Yep.
And, oh, that was another... Like, if you were on scholarship at my school, you had to do, like, a... kind of like a work study thing. Like, you would either have to like work in the library or work in clean dishes. And so it was very clear, like,
so problematic.
It was very clear, like, oh, you're a poor kid who's here for free and wash my dishes.
I wish I could say I was surprised by this late breaking fact that you also were like shown to be, but that definitely is not uncommon. Like, I definitely know that that's a situation that would come up in a lot of educational, you know, when they're like, it's cool, like, you'll basically work for the students.
Yeah, you're gonna work
in
for the students.
In addition to being their peer.
Yeah, and like, you would get library duty, which was so silly because like, no one ever used the library, so you'd just be sitting there. And to get to our gym, you had to like walk through the library, so like all the like jocks and stuff would be like, look at the
How
poor
ironic.
Kids who have to like get work in the library. So, you know, I can definitely say my high school experience, that school made me who I am. It definitely shaped me in some very interesting ways. And, you know, I guess, like, I wouldn't do it differently. I think my mom was right. It helped me. I mean, she sent me to that school because she was mostly like, I just want you to know how to deal with, like, racist white people. She literally was like, this is how you're gonna need to survive in the world. And I would, you know, I would come home and she would be like, you don't need to be friends with those racist white people. You're not there for that. You're there to get your education, to learn how to deal with them, you know. And I do think it helped in college, because I was kind of, you know, when I got to college, I was used to extremely privileged white kids. So they didn't like, you know, they didn't impress me. They didn't shock me when I got to college. And so many other kids I knew would be like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this girl like has a helicopter, or this kid's like a prince of blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I would just kind of be like, whatever. Yeah. Like, you know, rich white kids can also still be horrible people. So whatever.
Absolutely.
Let's, you know. So it did it did prepare me for that. It did.
Oh, it's time for a quick break. I will be back after a word from our friends at Maximum Fun.
Hi, it's Kevin from Max Fun HQ. This year for Giving Tuesday, we're inviting you to a super fun tarot event. It's got some of your favorite Max Fun hosts, and it's for a great cause. Join Depression Mode's John Moe, Carrie Poppy of Ono Ross and Carrie, Stuart Wellington from The Flophouse, Tom Lum from Let's Learn Everything, and Ellen Weatherford of Just the Zoo of Us. Your suggested $10 donation supports National CASA GAL and their work advocating for kids in foster care. That's this Giving Tuesday, November 29th at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. Check out MaximumFun.org/events for more information and tickets to the Tarot Show with John Moe.
I gotta go get into this MASH game with you,
yes.
M'lady. I gotta, this is, I'm excited to hear, because I feel like I'm getting these little peeks at sort of things that you were into that weren't school oriented, but there was so much to talk about with respect to this fucking crazy school that you went to that I'm so glad we did. But I want to use the MASH to like, you know, sort of tease out some of the like cultural, like sort of like, for example, let's start with this. Like, and it doesn't have to be people that you loved then, but like three bands then or now that you would have loved to, or you would love to basically just be able to teleport to like a show to get to see them perform.
Oh, okay. Ooh. I'm gonna do my high school faves.
Okay, great.
My favorite band in high school was Say Anything.
Okay.
I was obsessed with Say Anything. My friend and I like went to Warped Tour in 2007 just to see them.
Yes.
And then like the lead singer, Max Bemis, got sick and they like brought out Coheed and Cambria to sing with them. And everybody else was excited and we were just like, if I'm not getting Max Bemis, I don't want this. And we just like left.
Two-person
we were
protest.
Just like, we were just like, no. And I never made up that chance. I never got to see them again. So I was always very disappointed. So Say Anything.
Perfect.
I mean, my AIM screen name was Ash Blink Fan. So I gotta give it to Blink 182.
Fantastic.
I was big into Blink 182. And finally, on that list, Ani DeFranco.
Sweet, sweet Ani.
I knew that I was a queer kid from a pretty young age and started listening to like Ani DeFranco and Tori Amos when I was in like sixth grade, because all my friends were like, you know, like 12th grade lesbians.
Yeah.
And
I know it well. I know it well. I definitely was very much in that. Next category, let's do three movies that you can jump into. You're not reliving the plot of the movie. You're just like in that world with those characters whenever you feel like it.
Okay. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Oh,
Oh my God, why do I feel like I've never seen a movie in my life right now?
That's what this game does to people's brains. It like somehow really just like, erases everyone's memory.
Huh,
mine
so
included.
I've just never seen a movie.
I love that the one movie you could think of is a movie about erasing memories.
Like I'm just like, I was obsessed with that one in middle school.
Oh,
like
me too.
I had a custom hoodie that was like orange with like a bunch of quotes on it.
I had a custom hoodie. It was not a custom hoodie, but I had a hoodie that was like fan art hoodie that was like two of them and one bit. I can't see anything about you I don't like. And then she's like, you will or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm so proud to wear it. Like, notice me. Notice
I got
that
mine
I have this on.
Yeah, I got mine
from
a LiveJournal community where a bunch of people were like, we're going to order these. Who wants them?
Perfect.
So, and I was like, of course. Oh my gosh. I mean, well, I talked about Ingmar Bergman, and if I have to go with an Ingmar one, I'm going to go with Smiles of a Summer Night.
Great. I like this because we still have meteorological and or planetary stuff. Have you got nighttime? Yeah. We've got the sunshine of Eternal Sunshine.
Yeah, okay. Smiles of a Summer Night, Bergman's only comedy. And then I Exist in This World.
You might be my favorite. I'm drawing a blank, how to express that you're drawing a blank person of all
I'm
time.
I'm a TV girl. That's why I have my podcast, TV I Say with Ashley Ray, where we talk about TV.
Oh, TV I Say with Ashley Ray?
Yeah, my podcast where we talk about TV.
Don't worry. We'll make that a category as well.
And then I've had two answers come in my head that are like movies I loved as a kid, but they're too problematic to name now, so I won't.
Understood.
I will go with, it's called Water Lilies, I think. And it's like this it's like a French film that came out when I was in high school about these two gay high school girls. And it was one of the first big movies to center on that kind of story. And I just thought it was really cool. So there we go.
I wonder if I've seen it. There was a point at which I made sure to find every single queer girl art movie of all ever. But maybe it sounds familiar, but
I think it was by the lady who made A Portrait of a Girl on Fire or whatever.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. It's that right. Same kind of thing, except it's brooding high schoolers.
Mm-hmm. Perfect, perfect. Okay, next category, let's do three foods that in this reality, maybe you can't have too much of for whatever reason, whether it's bad for the world, bad for you, whatever. Ooh. In this alternate universe, we've sort of leveled the playing field. No one's getting hurt. No one's going to have the sugar crash. No one's going to have any allergies.
Okay.
Three foods. As much as you want, whenever you want.
Ooh. I'm going to go with Twizzlers.
Great. Makes
I love
happy.
Twizzlers.
Fantastic.
I could eat them for forever, but they made me sick. I love the double fudge round cookies.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. If I could eat those for forever, that would be a brilliant world. And just pasta, all the pastas.
Yes,
just if it was possible to have an endless stomach for pasta.
Love it and agreed. Pasta stomach. You have a side stomach that's just for pasta.
Yeah, just for pasta.
Beautiful. Let's do three places in the world that you would love to have a getaway place. That doesn't necessarily mean it has to be in a, remote place. It could be still in a bustling city. Three places you would love to have your place to escape to. And we can kind of teleport you there as well.
Yeah. Chicago for sure.
Great.
Berlin. Great. I love Berlin. And Amsterdam. Yeah.
Gorgeous. Okay. Listen, it's romance time. It's MASH. We got to get some romance in here. I don't care if it's living or dead, any age, any era, cartoons, comics, video games, any character from anything, any person from anywhere, three, and in your mind, they can be long-term partners or one-night stands. Doesn't matter. It's all you.
All me. Okay. Oscar Isaac.
Great.
Angelina Jolie.
Classic.
Oh, okay. And Reggie Watts.
Oh, yes.
I love him. I call him my husband all the time.
You should call him your husband.
Anytime he's on TV, I'm that's my husband, Reggie Watts, right there.
Oh, Reggie. Yeah. What a special and beautiful person from outer space who, we're so lucky to have on this planet. I love him so much. Okay. Beautiful. Well chosen. On board for all of those. Three TV shows that you can hop into whenever you want and just hang with the characters. Or it can be it's either that you can make those worlds real, or it can be you wrote on that show. Or you know what I mean?
You're a
part of the making of that show.
So okay.
It can be meta, or it can be imaginary, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to do Mad Men.
Great.
Because I worked in advertising, and I feel like I just kill it.
Oh, perfect. Yes, indeed.
I'm going to do Girlfriends. I loved Girlfriends and a lot of hot people in that world. So
yes, indeed. Yeah.
And it seemed like every other week they were just falling in love with a new person and seemed like a way better dating experience than I have in LA. So, and then, this is tough. I would go Dead Like Me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I love Dead Like Me, and I think it would be really cool if that world was real, and it turns out that I have the opportunity to just stick around as another person and take souls. I think that'd be a fun job.
Gorgeous. Love it, love it, love it. Okay, second to last category, let's do three I'm curious to hear like three sort of alternate universe careers, but I'm not saying you have to commit your whole life to it. I'm saying like you could dabble in this on the side, but maybe in this reality, like it's just too much to have to get that fourth degree, or, you know, like you're like, yeah, I want to own a restaurant, but I don't want to just own a restaurant or whatever. So three alternate universe careers, but it doesn't necessarily mean you're committed to it 24/7.
Okay. Okay. Rock star.
Great.
I like just a rock star.
Great, great, great.
And bookstore owner.
Lovely. Love it.
Love that. And I mean, I guess it would be great to be like a, like to own a weed shop.
Great.
Yeah. To have my own weed shop. I'd love that.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Okay. And then final category. Ooh, 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 ooh. What do I want to do if I were you? Maybe like three. Well, let's do this. Let's do three skills. You're clearly somebody who is, you know, you're extremely proficient, if not amazing, at many things. But let's give you three skills that we sort of give you down, that you download Matrix style. Like suddenly you know all martial arts, or suddenly you speak all languages, etc.
Okay, that was the first one I was going to say, is the ability to speak all languages.
Yes.
Obviously, as a language person, I've always wanted that. I've always wanted the ability to be like an amazing roller skater.
I love it.
Like those people who just like 1 foot and they're like doing backwards. I'm like, you're the coolest people who exist in the world.
Yes. Like, you're like, oh, the roller skates you're on must be different than the ones I'm on because are having a different experience.
Yeah, like I'm just falling down. They're so heavy and you're just gliding like an angel. And then I think it would be cool to like have the skills of like an Olympic swimmer.
Oh, hell yeah.
It would be cool to like really be able to swim really good.
Yeah. Agreed.
Like do dives. Yeah.
Yeah. Are you kidding me? Also, just like, it's just never a bad idea if you're like, you never know where you'd be in a situation where you'd be like, well, we'll just swim there.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll just swim there. And I want to be like the lady who's like, yeah, I swam the English Channel. I'm just that good. And I'm going to be like, yeah, me too. Well.
Oh my God. That would be, that's so far away from my reality that it's like, it feels like, you know, a dream.
Yeah. I'm one of those people. I go to the beach. I'm like, just my feet. Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, I can swim, but like, I just don't have that relationship to like my feeling of safety in the water or trusting myself in the water for that long. You know, it's just, that's amazing to me.
Yeah.
Okay. Beautiful. All right. Give me a word that describes, or that helps describe, how your, this last weekend was for you.
Ooh. Fun.
Great. Easy peasy. Okay. Fun. I am going to come up with your 100% guaranteed alternate universe mash reality. I would love for you to remind everyone what they should be checking out. I will.
Yes.
Let me see if I can push this to the front of the queue so that we can get your Elysian date in there and have it be. Yeah. You know, so if I, so if we put this out next week, then it will come out like on the day that your show is. So
boom.
You can mention that again as well. So yeah, hit us up. Let us know where we can find you and what we need to be following you.
Follow me on Twitter at @TheAshleyRay and on Instagram. It's all the same. I guess not Twitter anymore because it's dying, but at @TheAshleyRay on everything. I have a podcast, like I said, TV I Say with Ashley Ray. Wherever you listen to them, it's Earwolf Podcast, where I interview famous people about all the TV shows they love. You know, I talked to like Seth Rogen about 90 Day Fiancé and just like weird stuff.
Nice.
It's a lot of fun. Yeah. So check it out. We're in our second season. And, you know, if you're in LA, come to the Elysian tonight where I'll be doing my hour. Niles Abston is opening. Amber Rolla will be hosting. It's going to be a lot of fun. And I'm prepping for that album that'll be out. So.
Love it. Love it. Love it. That timed out so perfectly. I can't even tell you. That was like, I put the finishing touches on this work of art, if I don't mind my saying so myself. But okay, so there's a lot going on here. I feel real good about it. I feel like we have crossed the world of like how many different things you could possibly have going on. I'm not sure. I mean, those are your answers. Like, it's not, but sometimes there's a thing that sort of forms, like a pattern that forms, where you're like, oh, this person who said this one thing that happened to be British also said this one other thing that happened to be British, but they got both of those. So it starts to form this picture. The thing that I love about this is that this is so like all over the place that I don't know what that picture is. It is a collage of gorgeousness. I want to start with the fact that you, I'll put two things together that do make sense. Three things. I got them. First of all, I want to congratulate you on the weed shop you own.
Oh, yes.
In Amsterdam.
Oh, hell yeah.
Where you also have a beautiful house.
Oh, nice.
That you share with Reggie Watts. So that all feels like, mwah, it's a perfect flow.
Perfect. I'm loving this.
All around that is happening the fact that you have the ability to jump into water lilies.
Aww.
Whenever you want to get a totally different sort of sense of you and the world and this world. That,
yeah. Enjoying that a French high school that's not racist.
Oh. Exactly. Exactly. You also have the ability to. Well, you're either in Dead Like Me or you're on Dead Like Me. but either way, that is also part of your world.
Yeah.
So we got some sort of supernatural stuff happening there in a great way. You can have all the pasta you want.
Ugh.
And I'm going to say, while there are no negative repercussions anyway, it's also not surprising because as an Olympic level swimmer, you're going to want
to need the carbs.
You need that back. Need that resource.
Exactly.
And you have it and nothing bad is ever going to come of it. So you got that delicious stomach. Now, all of this can happen whenever you want to take a break, you want a little musical break. I want you to know that you can see the complete version of Say Anything whenever you want.
Wow.
So you can put that memory of never making up and seeing him again behind you. Because
behind me.
You can see him whenever you want.
Wow.
Intact. Intact. That is your MASH world. Ashley, what a blast. This has been so much fun.
This was so fun.
To do this. I want you to continue to enjoy Colombia for me. I've never been there. I don't know if I will ever go there. I would love to go.
You should.
You know what I mean? That's a place where I'm like, I don't know anyone there. And I would love to visit, but will it end up on the roster? Sounds like it needs to.
It should. I absolutely love it. I fell in love with Medellin. It's one of the maybe most beautiful places I've ever been.
Yeah.
This is like a place I'm going to try to visit multiple times in my life now.
Nice.
So.
Nice. All right, I'm putting it on there. Maybe I can do a little. I want to go to Chile really bad, so maybe I can put a little.
Yeah,
like, we could do some sort of beautiful.
Yeah, I'm like planning a whole like a Brazil, Argentina. I'm going to do a whole thing.
Yeah, Portugal. I'm dying to go to Portugal. I've never been there. All right, we both got a lot of work to do in the travel.
A lot of traveling to do.
It's going to be great. Everyone, please follow Ashley. Check out everything. If you're in the LA area, go to that shooting of that special. Why not? It's going to be so much fun.
It's going to be the best.
That's a great group of people in a great place. And I will talk to you next time on the podcast. The show is recorded by me and edited by Julian Burrell. And as always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Hey, remember when we could save kittens from trees or lunch on skyscrapers?
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.